Hi, I'm Connor, and this is Learn English with Everest, a podcast where I chat to native English speakers in real, unscripted English, and then, step by step, explore the language used. This episode is the first in our mini-series about the IELTS exam. So each week, I'm going to be looking at the four parts of the IELTS exam in turn: writing, reading, listening, and speaking. This week, we're going to start with writing, and joining me is Jane, a teacher here in Everest with lots and lots of experience teaching the IELTS exam. So we'll give you some tips and advice about improving your writing skills and go through the two very different tasks you're required to do. I should say as well that we'll be talking throughout this series about academic IELTS rather than general IELTS. They are different, so if you want to do general IELTS, make sure you understand some of the differences between general and academic. But on this series, in this episode and the others, we'll be talking about academic IELTS. There'll be lots of useful vocabulary and expressions and lots of tips for the exam. And if you miss anything, if you're not sure about anything, then all of the material is at everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. So go to everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. So before we get to the interview with Jane, let's just maybe recap the details of the IELTS writing exam, if you're not too familiar with the exam. It's an hour in total, and you have two tasks to do. One of them should take you around 20 minutes, and one should take you around 40 minutes. So it's quite straightforward in that sense. There are no choices. You get given a task, you do it. You get given a second task, and you do that, and that's it. So task one is 150 words, and task two is 250 words. For task one, you're going to get given a graph or a table or a chart or a diagram or something like this, and you have to describe and summarize and explain the information in your own words. So there's lots of different things that you can get. Generally, though, it tends to be either something data-based, something usually with numbers, and you need to describe what's happening in the table or the chart or the diagram. Or you get something where you have to describe a process or how something works, or how something has maybe changed. So we'll look at all of these in a little bit more detail in a minute. Task two then is quite different. So task two, you need to write an essay. And you need to write this in response to a point of view or an argument or a problem. So it's quite different, and it involves your opinion, unlike task one. And again, we'll get into all the details in a minute. So before we go any further, I think it's useful to know what you're being marked on. So what is the examiner looking for? So let's have a listen to Jane.
So in the IELTS writing exam, the examiners are looking for four different things, really. So they're marking you for your task achievement is the first one. So this essentially is basically whether or not you answered the question the way they wanted you to answer it. You know,
yes.
Did you fulfill the task that you were set? So this is, you know, for all writing tasks, you have to make sure that you are answering the question and not, you know, going off topic or doing something different to what they want.
It's easier than you might think to not answer the question.
It really is, Like for task one especially, you can't, you know, it's very much fact-based, as I think we're going to talk about in a minute. But really for that task achievement, you have to stay on the topic and just keep it to the facts.
That's
what they're looking for.
You're not speculating, and you're not thinking of,
exactly.
Oh, well, this is really interesting because nobody cares.
None of that, exactly.
And then task achievement for the task two is that you are very carefully considering the exact question, advantages, disadvantages, opinions, all this sort of thing.
You really have to read, like, so important in every exam, but particularly for IELTS writing, you have to read the question and answer what specifically they want you to do. If they only want a positive, you only give them a positive. If they only, you know, you really have to make sure. So when you're doing your preparation, underline those keywords to check that you are not going off a totally different direction than the examiners actually want.
Yeah, it's really formulaic, and it's and the more practice you do, I think with you should be able to get lots of marks for task achievement if you do lots of practice of the IELTS specifically, as opposed to just your writing.
General writing. Yeah. It's one of the easier areas to get high marks on if you are really conscientious about fulfilling the task requirement. So that, as you said, that can be practiced.
So this is the first thing the examiners are looking for, task achievement. Have you done what you are supposed to do? Have you answered the question? As Jane says, you have to be conscientious. So conscientious is another word for careful or meticulous. You want to make sure every detail is correct. This word, conscientious, is very easily confused, especially since we have two other words in English, conscience and conscious. So these three words are really, really easy to confuse. So I thought I might use this opportunity to explain them a little bit. So conscience, which kind of looks like con and the word science, so conscience, that's like the little voice in your head, the thing that tells you what's right and what's wrong, you know, your ethics or your morality. Whereas conscious, C-O-N-S-C-I-O-U-S, means aware of something or alert. So it's the opposite of unconscious. So you get hit on the head and you fall unconscious. And then when you wake up, you're conscious. So you have conscientious, very careful. You have conscience, your ethics. And you have conscious, aware and awake. Very, very confusing. All of these words are on the website as well, so you can have a look for the spelling. Anyway, back to the examiners. What else are they looking for?
Yeah, and then the second one, the three more tasks, and they're all about IELTS, but they're also more generally about your English. So so number two is coherence and cohesion. So what is that exactly?
So coherence and cohesion, this refers to your language, but also your organization of the text.
Yeah.
So are you presenting it in a way that is logical? Do your paragraphs, you know, have a good style of organization? Is it one topic per paragraph?
Mm.
Do you have, you know, separate paragraphs? That's really important.
Yeah.
People forget. But also things like your linkers, like your conjunctions. How are you connecting the phrases together?
Yeah.
Are you using relative clauses? Things like that. So it can't be, you know, 100 separate sentences. They must link together nicely. So coherence is kind of the smooth flow. Coherence and cohesion. It's understandable to the reader. They should know exactly what you're talking about, but also it fits together really nicely.
Yeah.
That's really what you're trying to get.
Yeah, so that's kind of something that you're looking for, you know, in any piece of writing,
in
your own language,
absolutely.
It needs to be cohesive and it needs to be coherent.
Yeah, it should make sense and it should read well. But, you know, that's something that you need to practice with practice your writing, but also your language does come into it there.
Yeah.
They do need to see, you know, the variation of your linkers and things like that.
Yeah, it can't be just and. Yeah, exactly. And so that's the first two. And then the last two are lexical resource and grammatical range and accuracy, which I guess is just a fancy way of saying vocabulary and grammar.
Absolutely, because they don't just want to say do correct vocab and grammar. So the lexical resource, this really refers to a lack of repetition. So what the examiners want to see is that the candidate in the exam has a variety of language to refer to the topic. So they don't expect you to know exactly everything about the topic, but you should be able to express your ideas in different ways. So things we do in the classes all the time, we talk about synonyms, we talk about, you know, using different language to express the same thing. That's what you're trying to get to with your lexical resource. Using your phrasal verbs, you know, using your adverbs.
Yeah,
really,
using what you
Yeah,
want.
Using
yeah,
exactly,
demonstrating, yeah.
Making it a bit more complex. So kind of, they don't want your basic short sentences. It should be rich.
Yeah.
Rich language as much as you can.
Especially if you're aiming for sort of 7, 7.5, things like that, you're going to need a really nice variation of vocabulary and then grammar as well. You're going to have, you know, sentences that really show you can use complex structures and complex verb tenses and things like that.
So your writing has to be well structured. It has to be logical and it should always be easy to follow and easy to understand what you're trying to say, to understand your arguments. And of course, you need to use lots of good vocabulary and grammar. You need, as Jane says, to use rich language. So this is a good word as well. You should always be trying to build your vocabulary and synonyms for the exam. And one of the ways you can do this is to take a word you already know, rich, but try to use it in new ways or different ways. So I'm sure you know the word rich means wealthy, you have a lot of money. But things can be rich as well if they are full of something. So a sound can be very rich, or a colour can be very rich. You know, if it's very vibrant, it's very intense. Food can be rich if it's very, very heavy, particularly in relation to dairy. So something like dessert with lots of cream can be very, very rich. And your vocabulary can be rich, full of useful and varied words. So start trying to make your vocabulary even richer. Returning to the exam then, Jane and I talked about some general advice for the exam overall. The first thing is that it's an academic exam, so the language should be quite formal and obviously suitable to the task.
Yeah, so this is something that, you know, in classes, this is something we would always look at, the difference between formal and informal language, how to structure more formal sentences. So using structures like the passive is something we do far more in academic writing.
And then,
you know, the ability to choose between what is, you know, but compared to although or however.
Yeah.
Small things like that can really change into an academic style. And that's what you're trying to go for. So register, the academic register is a big factor in the writing exam.
It has to be appropriate.
Absolutely.
Even between task one and task two, the task one is very... Task one should be really boring. It should be a very dull presentation. And task two has a little bit more
personality.
Personality.
Can express yourself a bit more. Task one, no. We just want... We want the facts. We want reporting the facts.
And then, like, you know, there are any number of topics, theoretically, which could come up. But there are things, I think, that tend to just come up again and again and again and again.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to reflect academic subjects. So there are certain things, I guess, you can definitely prepare. You know, things like the environment and crime and,
you know, statistical things that if you go back through past papers over the years, you'll find a lot of statistics about energy usage and kind of forest and population. And because for task one especially, it's very numbers based a lot of the time. So they're looking for things that you don't have to know about the topic itself.
Exactly.
But you should be able to have a, you know, I can recognize this graph is about the population of a country over a period of time.
And that's important as well. If it's a graph about forestry, they just expect you to know about graphs, not forestry. So it doesn't matter.
If you
matter,
know about forestry, even better.
Great. And but sometimes that's a problem because you do know about forestry and then you say, oh, it's interesting, the drop here is because of this thing that happened in 1997.
They do not want that.
No interpretation, just facts.
So let's have a look at the two tasks in a bit more detail, starting with task one.
So in task one, it's generally something graphic, so something that you would that has visualized the information. So it would be a bar chart or a pie chart, a graph or a table with, you know, statistics and figures. But those are not the only options. Quite often you would have a diagram which represents a procedure. For example, how to make a certain product.
Yeah.
And you would be expected to explain how this product is made through looking at the graph. So kind of articulating information based on a picture or an image is really important.
Yeah.
Just saying what you see.
Yeah.
Kind of sequence of events. That's key.
Yeah, I guess there are the two kind of types. One is kind of a presentation of data, and the other is something that's changing, or there's very often like two maps, and you have to talk about how things have changed, which is quite similar to the procedure and things like that. It's this sort of change over time.
Compare and contrast.
Yeah.
Kind of style. Yeah.
So, I mean, the difference, I guess, in the first part, the kind of data ones, is that you need to be really up and really sort of particular about how you use numbers and all the things that go around numbers.
Yes.
So what are some things to maybe look out for there?
Well, there's a set of vocabulary that you can always rely on. If you're preparing for task one, you should be familiar with vocabulary that relates to change and increase and decrease and movement, you know, things like fluctuation, rapid decline, things like that. So combinations of statistical language, but also how it is moving. Yeah. So if you're able to look and say, this is decreasing and increasing, you know, that's the basic, you should be able to vary that language, you know, like we said, in terms of lexical resource and variety. Yeah. You have to have a lot of different ways to say
up
increase
and down.
It, up and down, increase, decrease, you know, varying, things like that.
So yeah, where it's like, you know, plummet and collapse,
rocket.
And then rocket and soar, and, you know, then just alternatives, decline, decrease, increase, and then modifying them as well.
Absolutely, so, you know, greatly decreased, things like, just little things like that would make a huge difference in how the examiners are perceiving your writing.
A
bit more complex.
I don't know, what I tend to find all the time is that students confuse the combinations, things like rapid increase and increasing rapidly. So that adverb and verb and adjective and noun is constantly confused. So if you can do that right, most examiners are going to think, oh, wow, okay, you know, this is good. So lots and lots of numbers and lots of variation and prepositions as well, you know, from, to, in, on the prepositions.
Your accuracy of the prepositions and kind of collocations, you know, an increase in.
Yeah.
So when you're learning the vocabulary, I would always recommend to learn the preposition that goes with it rather than, you know, trying to remember or predict, learn it together.
Yeah, and it's only like very high level students that will produce something which accurately uses all of the prepositions with numbers. You know, was an increase of 10% by 12% in 1993. Yeah. These sort of things are really hard. It's really easy to confuse.
They do change, but even to show that you're aware of, you know, some difference in the prepositions, that's really important as well, that it's, you know, there's an understanding of the collocation.
So, as you heard, there are two categories of question in task one, like we outlined at the beginning. Questions based on graphs and charts and other data, and questions based on a process or a procedure. So if you're talking about a chart or a graph, you have to be able to use prepositions accurately and to describe movement. I mentioned this to Jane, but I'll say it again. Be really careful with your word combinations. So there was a rapid increase, but the number increased rapidly. So adjective and noun, verb and adverb. There was a slow decline in the population, or the population declined slowly. So these combinations, and you need to use as wide a variety as possible, they're really, really easy to confuse, but they're also pretty straightforward to learn. Once you get into the swing of it, once you can do it right, you can get a lot of marks quite easily for using these type of words and using them correctly, because believe me, most students do not use them correctly. If you're not writing about a chart or a graph, though, you might get a map or a process of some type.
And then, like you said, with the other part where it's a process or a procedure or maps or things like that, I guess a lot of that is about tenses. You need to make sure you're using the correct tense, which is very often going to be the present perfect.
Yep.
And passives, you mentioned too, are describing things like, you know, water is added and, you know, these sort of scientific processes.
If you can do a present perfect passive, even better. If you can the water has been added, you know,
perfect,
go mental with that one, but much as you can.
And you mentioned cohesive words and think linking words and things, and in those sort of questions you're talking a lot about sequences,
like
first and next and following this and then, and you know, that kind of things.
Okay, let's move on to task two then, a completely different type of writing task, and one worth double the marks and with double the amount of time to spend on it.
So task two is an opinion-based task. So normally there will be a sentence which expresses an idea or explains a situation, and then you will be asked to express your point of view on that. You may be asked to present more generally, you know, just generally what your opinion is, or it may say specifically agree or disagree.
Yeah.
So again, be very, very careful. Read the question very carefully, underline the keywords to check that you are answering it the way they want you to answer it.
Yeah, and even those little things where they ask you, you know, do you agree, or to what extent do
you
agree?
That's very different. That indicates you should agree with it, but how much do you agree with it? So, you know, be careful with those ones. Just don't latch on to agree and go for it. Really read the sentence and make sure you have the right idea.
Yeah, and then sometimes they say discuss both points of view.
Yes.
And sometimes they say discuss both points of view and give your opinion.
Yes.
So there's an extra element. So you need to sort of plan your paragraphs and plan, you know, what you think. And also, it doesn't really matter what your opinions are. Like, nobody cares about what you think.
Yeah, I mean, something that I would always say to students is, it doesn't have to be true.
No.
It doesn't have to be honest. That's not the issue here. The issue is they want to see how you use your language to express this idea. It's a language exam, not a fact-based exam.
Exactly, you know? Yeah.
So don't worry about not knowing anything about a specific topic. Everything on the IELTS exam is academic, but in a very general way. It's not specialist knowledge that you are expected to know. You just need to know English. You're being examined on your English, not on your knowledge of marine biology or renewable energy. So what else does Jane recommend then?
In every single case that I have encountered as a teacher, when a student makes a plan, and they take maybe even 5 minutes to make a good plan of their task two, they almost always get a higher score than students who do not. It goes without saying, taking the time to just plan your paragraphs, plan the ideas, note down some vocabulary you want to use. If you learn some really nice phrasal verbs, write them down, make sure you include them. Because if you're trying to write this spontaneously, even, you know, a native English speaker would not be able to write this spontaneously.
No.
You have to make the plan. And if you do, even you feel better about the argument. Students often finish earlier because they have more time to check they were well organized and they felt more comfortable.
And you say everything in something very close to the 250 words.
Exactly.
It might be 260 or 270.
Yeah.
Whereas if you write 250 and you realize you haven't got to the conclusion,
exactly.
And then you're writing 300 and that's just like, you will be penalized for writing fewer than 250 words. And while you won't be for writing 350, it's going to be, there's more space to have mistakes.
Yeah.
It's going to be too long. It's just not going to work.
And then kind of cohesion and coherence, as we keep coming back to, if it's going on much longer than it should be, something is being lost there. One of the paragraphs is too long. You know, maybe an argument, you have an extra argument you don't need. Maybe you're wasting time.
It's just something is redundant.
Unnecessary. Yeah. So planning, my number one tip for task two, make the plan. Take the time to make the plan.
So if you take one thing away from this episode, it is to take your time to carefully read the question and plan out your answer in advance. It will definitely get you a better mark. So to finish off then, I took a sample question and Jane and I considered how we might go about answering. So I'll read the question slowly, and it's on the Everest website too. Here it is. Some people think that the aim of a university education is to get a good job. Others believe there are wider benefits to a university education for both students and society. Discuss both views and give your opinion. So some people think university is just for jobs, other people think there are other benefits. And then you need to discuss both of the views and give your opinion.
So
this is a nice question.
What would you do for something like this, or what would be your kind of plan, I guess?
Well, the first thing that I would do really conveniently is you can separate the two ideas, the two viewpoints, into your paragraphs.
Yeah.
This is your paragraph layout immediately. So you have the people who believe it has benefits, the people who don't. And then you have your own opinion.
Yeah, so that's you're, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, you could even think kind of agree, disagree, neutral.
Yeah.
There's another way to look at it. So that automatically, the question is giving you a lot of help.
Mm.
I would say as well, underline keywords here, or kind of take ideas from the question.
Yeah.
Take vocabulary that you want to use. So wider benefits. You should be using that structure. That's a nice structure that you can take and incorporate into it.
And you can use, for both task one and task two, you can use all the vocabulary
of the question,
but try to vary it. And, you know, don't just repeat the question back.
Yeah.
If the first line of your answer is the question, you're not going to get any marks. But
rephrase it or exploit it for the vocab, or kind of turn it around a little bit, but take advantage of it. Because I would also say, be very careful with your spelling. For words that are in the question,
make sure they are spelled
correctly in your answer.
Yes, definitely. That reflects really badly. So you've got university and college, and you've got job and profession, and you've got benefit and advantage, and you can just use loads of synonyms.
Yeah.
Set up your first paragraph. As you say, one, that's the getting a good job. Two, the benefits for society. Three, which one you agree with.
Yeah.
And then what would be your conclusion then, or what would you put?
So the conclusion, I suppose, quite often the conclusion can be a synthesis of all the ideas together.
Mm.
So in your conclusion, you can firstly, you should not introduce any new information.
Yeah, yeah.
That is the thing about the conclusion where a lot of students go a bit wrong.
Oh, and another thing.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So in your conclusion, it should really be, as I have, you know, this was my point, and just kind of bring your point home. You shouldn't be saying this, and then the reader has some brand new piece of information to discuss. No,
yeah. It's just, I've told you one, I've told you two, and I've told you that I agree more with number one. So there you have it.
It's nice sometimes, it's called a call to action, you know, for your last last part of the conclusion to say, you know, university is the most important thing and we should prioritize it for our children, full stop. You know, ending on a strong point like that, a lot of people find that's a nice way to end your task too, because it's opinion based and ending on a strong opinion.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of people prefer that, or just, I have presented this information and that's it.
Yeah.
Don't end with that's it. Yeah. By the way.
Goodbye. Yeah. I think it's there's a tendency, I think, to overthink these things, especially if students are used to writing university essays in their own language, which have to be obviously much more nuanced and much more complex and everything else with supporting evidence and footnotes and everything. The IELTS is not like that at all. And it's very short, it's very simple. And if you keep the language and the vocabulary and the structures complex and advanced, and the actual content and the arguments just really simple and really straightforward, you can't go too wrong, really.
No, that's exactly it. And just the number one thing to remember, it's a language exam. Show your language, show your ability. You know, show them what you can do.
Yeah,
that's,
look at me.
That's why you're there. You're there to show off everything you know in English. You know, use all your skills, use all your phrasal verbs, use your everything that you can. Just really bring it home that you have this level of English. That's what they want to see.
Yeah, perfect. All right, well, that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Connor. All right.
So, to give you my conclusion, you've got some advice about the structure of the exam, the big differences between task one and task two, and the different approaches you'll need to take depending on the question. Now all you need to do is start practicing. The more variations you do, the more practice you do, the more writing you do, the easier it will be on the day. And that's it. Don't forget, everything we've talked about today is on the website, which is everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. This is the first part of our four-part mini-series on the IELTS exam. We'll be working through the other three parts in the upcoming episodes. So subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already, and don't miss out. Special thanks to my guest this week, Jane, and thanks also to Nouveau Noise, who provide the theme music for the show. And of course, if you like the show, if you have some friends who are maybe doing the IELTS exam, then let them know, tell them about this podcast. And that's it. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you next week.